my main competitor has been very, very good at causing brand confusion. So it's a personal annoyance for me right now, my personal mission to get them out of that number one spot, even though I'm losing money on it.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
I understand you recorded a podcast with Corey Northcutt, and it was all about SEO.
That's right. So Corey and I know each other through Young Entrepreneurs Council, which is a great collection of entrepreneurs, some of the best resources that you can find online for anybody that is an entrepreneur out there and is looking for good networking opportunities. You do have to meet certain thresholds in order to join, and Corey obviously hits those. I've used his services for another business of mine and was really, really impressed with what he had to offer. Brad, who works with us, is actually the one who first recommended him to me. This guy has been working in the online world in SEO capacity forever. I mean, he's a dinosaur in the SEO world, knows a ton about SEO. And one of the questions I posed to him, and I really wanted to drill down on this podcast, was whether or not there is value at all in SEO anymore from a buying standpoint. In other words, can it be trusted? I had a buyer tell me just a few weeks ago, we were talking on the phone about one of the businesses I was representing, and he wanted to know where our customers are coming from on the websites. And I said, well, he's got good rankings, and then he also does paid. And he came back and he told me, he said, well, I don't really care about the organic rankings because I can't control that at all. In fact, all I care about is a paid acquisition channel. I think we hear that more and more from people, that they trust that paid acquisition channel more than the organic channel. But I think it's almost an overreaction, and there's a lot of opportunity being lost because everyone focuses just on the paid and just views the organic just as a sort of bonus to everything else. A couple of the topics that we address in this podcast is whether or not the future of SEO is going to be strong. You know, we have more and more devices being added for voice-based search. We have the paid creep that's been happening on organic rankings, where organic listings are being pushed down the page. And so this is really kind of a step back to look at your online business and say, should I be focusing on SEO? What's the opportunity here with SEO as well?
Okay, so I'm not going to say whether I think, you know, you should be focused on it or not. What I can say is that a business with multiple traffics of multiple channels of revenue is worth a lot more money. And from my experience a long time ago, SEO was a long-term game. I survived the Penguin update, Panda update. Actually, I sold before the Penguin update, but it didn't matter because I didn't know anything about link building anyway. All I did was good quality content over a long period of time, and I was rewarded. It's a lot more complicated than that, I think. So I'm real excited to see what Corey has to say. Let's go ahead and listen.
Well, hold on one second. I'm going to give away a bit of a teaser on this, and that is something that you said. And I think what you said is perfect because it's the sense that a lot of...
Did you say what I said was perfect just now?
Dude, don't let it get to your head. Yeah, it was actually perfect because a lot of people think that SEO is more complex. They think it's complicated. They think that it's a nut that's very difficult to crack. And a lot of us, especially those who have been around through the Panda, Penguin, Hummingbird, you know, all these sort of updates, animal updates that happen, look at SEO and we're like, my goodness, you can't trust this. Look what happened back then. It got completely destroyed. One of the big takeaways from this, and Corey gets into this, is that SEO now is more predictable than it's ever been. Google has gotten better at what they're doing, so they don't need to shake things up as much anymore. Now, is it a little bit harder to rank? Sure, because Google has done a better job of putting good information in front of people, but rankings are more stable now than they've ever been before. And so the big takeaway is that while it's somewhat complex, there's a huge opportunity because people like you and I have kind of looked at SEO as that thing that's a bonus out there.
From a buyer's point of view, what you just said might be very valuable. You know, it's harder to rank now. And so if we're listing a business and there's good organic rankings, that in itself could have more value to a buyer, because most everybody else just cheats to get to the top. And you can't actually do that anymore. But if you're at the top on page one, that's really strong, strong value. And I think hopefully in the long run for any business, we'll add more diverse revenue channels, which brings up the value overall. All right, can we go listen to Corey now?
Absolutely. Let's go. All right, Corey, thank you for joining me on this quick episode here on SEO.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So I know you've listened to a couple of the episodes before, so you know that we like to have our guests introduce themselves. So why don't you provide everyone listening here with a background on yourself?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I've been doing SEO for going on 17 years. I've been, I guess, running businesses of different shapes and forms for about as long. I came from web hosting and doing different IT brands, and now I run an SEO agency called Northcutt.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I've actually, just full disclosure, I have used your services in the past, but with a lot of the guests that we have here on the Quiet Life podcast, are people that we've used in one capacity or another, their services. So we trust these services. We trust you as far as the quality of work that you do. And I also know Brad, who works with Quiet Life Brokerage, he's used your services quite a bit in the past as well, which is how I was referred to you, was actually through Brad. So that's pretty cool. Now, you have a past in web hosting as well. Is that right?
That's true. Yeah. I started a provider called Ubiquity. It was eventually acquired by LeaseWeb, but not before I actually exited the company and sold it back to my business partners.
That's pretty cool. So my background is actually in web hosting as well. My first job out of college was with a company called Alabanza Corporation. And they were the first ones to create, if people know, like Web Hosting Manager or cPanel. They were the first ones to actually come out with a cPanel. And cPanel was a competition to Alabanza. And I remember when we developed that, the CEO talking about competition told me, he's like, I'm not worried about competition. Took us years to be able to create our I think they called it the account management tool or something stupid like that. Sure. And of course, the template was already out there, so it didn't take them years to replicate what we were doing. And they've done quite well. So cautionary tale there. But the first business I sold under Quiet Life Brokerage was a web hosting company. So
nice.
Yeah, very familiar with the space. So you sold that. How many businesses have you bought and sold over the years?
So I like to call myself a three-time founder in all my bios. It's tough to say, though, because I had partners in that. I've had a lot of failed ventures too, right? A lot of projects that I spun up or that maybe sold for cheap. So it's been all over the map. I did web hosting. We spun off a data center services brand from that. We had a Ventrilo provider called Darkstar Communications, which was the largest provider of Ventrilo for quite a while. Most people, I think, don't even know what that is anymore.
Yeah, but I've never heard of it.
It was a big thing for a while. And it wasn't even my world, but it was kids that play World of Warcraft. They would need voice chat for that. And it sounds insane today. We've got Zoom and Skype and all these tools that are free, but they would pay for it. So you'd have 50 or 100 people on one voice server and you needed tools to manage it. So a lot of different businesses. I kind of created a framework for how I like to build and market them, but all in completely different spaces.
Yeah. You know, I like to segment internet entrepreneurs as to those that were started before the Panda Penguin days and then those that have come into it after, because the world is so much different. You know, people like you and I that have been in the online world for, I'm going on 20 years here since I built my first website. And, you know, back then, and actually back when I started Quiet Life Brokerage, when I decided to start Quiet Life Brokerage, what did I do? I went out and I built a website from scratch. And then I custom coded an affiliate program in there. And that was kind of how I launched everything, was me going out, coding, designing, launching, doing the SEO, everything top to bottom. And today, I mean, if you want to start up a new site, you can still do that. But boy, it's so much different today. You really wouldn't want to take that approach as much. It's gotten a lot more complex.
That's true.
Yeah. You seem to come from that sort of past entrepreneur. This is a good idea. Let me see if I can just build this out real quick.
Yeah. Well, it's changed so much. Yeah. And I, on one hand, I love how quickly you can spin things up. Like, you've got Shopify, you see people with stores in 10 minutes. It's completely insane. On the other hand, I feel like a lot of people don't go as deep with their businesses now. You've got projects. I can start a company that might make $500 a month and that's fine, right? I'll do 10 of those this week. So the mindset's changed.
Yeah, definitely. It's changed quite a bit. So I wanted to have you on to talk about SEO. And I'll tell you kind of the question that spurred this on for me, and I think would be a good start for our discussion here. I was talking to a buyer the other day about one of my clients, and he's Amazon and Magento mix. So he's got his own websites, but you know, a good portion of his business comes through Amazon. But we were looking at the websites because they're doing really well. Amazon's struggling a bit, but the websites are doing really, really well. And we were looking at those, and this buyer was asking, well, where do the clients come from? Are they coming from organic rankings? Are they coming from paid search? Is there a good mature search campaign out there? So I told him, I said, well, it's a mix. You know, there's really good SEO on the site. There's room to improve that as well. But they also have a paid campaign that they look at. And this buyer almost seemed to dismiss the SEO side and said, well, I can't control the SEO world at all. I'm interested in the paid acquisition. And I see this more and more. And I think this is kind of the people waking up from the hangover of the Panda Penguin, which is almost, goodness, we're coming up on 7 years or something like that. Is that right? About 7 years?
Yeah,
2012. So it's been a while since this happened. And I think, you know, people have really adjusted their mindset to not trusting SEO at all. So my question to you and to ask on behalf of everyone that out there looking to buy an online business, can you trust SEO and can you build or grow a business on the back of SEO and have it be sustainable?
Oh my God, yes. So there's one question that has been around since I feel like SEO began, which is, where is this going? Like, can I trust it long-term? And I think Google's actually been very transparent about what they want to accomplish. As much as we've had different updates like Panda and Penguin, Hummingbird shook things up too, there have been quite a few, but Google's always been forthcoming. And I feel like most of the media out there sensationalizes what's happening, and it does a disservice to business owners. Because what does Google really care about? They want to reward an experience that is naturally relevant, popular, and enjoyable. That's it. And they've been working towards this goal for all of this time. And I don't think it goes away. There's never going to be a point to where a better experience is paid advertising for what they deliver. If they ever reach that point, I think all bets are off. I think somebody disrupts them. Bing or somebody else overtakes them. There's no way people want that. It is a better experience when it's not simply rented. So that doesn't go away. It's just they keep iterating towards getting better at what they set out to do. Like we talk about like that pre-Panda, pre-Penguin world. I think it did a lot of good. I look back at how I did SEO back then and, you know, it was a little gray. It was hard to, like, that was the conversation we were having with people. It's like, I think we should be as white hat as possible. At that time, I feel like that was the source of a lot of like Rand Fishkin's fame. At the time, he was not getting very much respect from professional SEOs. And he was saying, nope, completely white hat. Don't mess with anything. No schemes, no link wheel, pyramid, tetrahedron. Like, I'm sure you've seen all the different diagrams and wacky ideas that people were coming up with back then. And that Panda made him correct. Like just overnight, everything shifted. And it's like, well, yeah, they finally got better and they really are rewarding people that aren't going against Google. Like, you do want to work with them.
Let me play devil's advocate a little bit here and argue against SEO. Now, this is not my personal position. I actually agree with you. I think there's a ton of opportunity in SEO. And I actually think the SEO world is a lot more stable today than it was back in the pre-updates, the pre-Panda Penguin Hummingbird updates, mainly because the results are better and Google's delivering a better experience. And before it was very easy to game the search engines. You were doing gray hat, I was doing gray hat. Everybody was doing gray hat back then. But anyways, let me play devil's advocate. Two changes that people look at and they see it as encroaching on the organic SEO. One would be the number of paid listings that show up above the fold on Google and where organic rankings start to be pushed down. And then two, voice-enabled search. Let's start with the first one here, the placement of organic rankings. I have another business that I own, and I absolutely, absolutely hate bidding on my brand keyword because it's my brand keyword. I show up number one, I show up number two, I show up number three. But if I don't bid on it, I've got four other people bidding on my my brand and they're up above me. So from that standpoint, has SEO become less valuable for business owners? Or is that a trend that you think is going to continue where paid listings push out the organic rankings?
I don't. And in fact, I saw the same trends. And by the way, if somebody, just for the benefit of listeners, if somebody is pushing you out that way on your branded searches, if they mention you by name, you can file a trademark request with Google and get them shut down. They're still able to use your brand name as a keyword, but it can water down their messaging if somebody's getting too aggressive with that. So I don't see it going too much further. And yeah, that was a big story each time Google has experimented with expanding the ad block. But there's data on click-through rates that's out there. Rand Fishkin, actually through his new startup SparkToro, published Jump Shots analysis of this. And it's incredible how many people still click on organic over paid. The overwhelming majority still click on organic across the board. Even in the most extreme, like biased examples that I've seen, actually just sent out our quarterly here a few weeks ago that looked at this, Ahrefs had their own click-through rate data of tons of searches that they've scraped. And in their example, they said the maximum went up to 46% will click on ads. Up to is the operative word there. I think that's the most extreme example is 46%. Where, you know, it's a branded search, your brand is number one, obviously that's what they wanted, you're going to click that, sure. But the jump shot data said 3% was their average. So somewhere between 3% and 46% are clicking on paid ads. It's still the minority, and I don't see that ever changing.
3% to 46% is pretty broad.
It is pretty broad. The average is 3.
Okay.
But yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And in the example I have, we have a lot of brand confusion in our space. And my main competitor has been very, very good at causing brand confusion. So it's a personal annoyance for me right now. My personal mission to get them out of that number one spot, even though I'm losing money on it. Yeah. But so that's interesting. I would tend to agree that there's only so much real estate that they're going to give to that ad spot, to those ad blocks. Because they have been focused from day one on that user experience. So they want users, especially brand searches, to be able to find the brand that they're looking for. What about voice-enabled search? I know for myself, like if I want to find out some quick data or whatever, I've got a Google Pixel phone. I just give it a little squeeze and Google Assistant comes up and I just ask it a question. And more it's becoming intelligent and giving the response. More and more, it's taking those responses, of course, from other websites. And so they aren't getting any of the traffic to that. This wouldn't be so much a concern for e-commerce sites, but for content sites, I mean, is this something to be looking out for and maybe something that's going to encroach on their opportunities in the future?
Yeah, there's definitely demographics that are going to be hit by this. You and I talked about famous quotations here like a week ago and how that is an industry that got hit pretty hard by Panda. I think the nuance is any short, simple information is going to have a hard time. Like just the example from last month, Google actually started returning no result searches when people asked for the time and date. And there was a website that was timeanddate.com that ranked number one for all of these. And I'm sure they were raking in a lot of AdSense doing it. Not probably great ads for those people, but still it was working for them in the moment. So there are really nuanced types of businesses that I think buyers should probably be a little wary of. If it doesn't give deep information, it can be disrupted by a simple answer from Google. But if it does go deeper, I think it goes outside the scope of what Google can accomplish with voice search because it's going to be complex. There's going to be value in multiple results then. So that's my answer.
Okay. Well, I think that's a fair answer. I think, when you ask Google a question, if it's a quick answer like time and date, that makes sense. But if you're asking how to replace a sprinkler head. Google might give you a short response, but you're not looking for a three-step process for that. You're probably looking for pictures or a video or more in-depth, you know, here's the in-depth guide. And so getting that response is actually a good thing. Getting that, being that featured response in Google would probably be a good thing because more people are going to click through to your page, right?
Yep. And there's also still value being lost right now from what they call no-click searches, where maybe you appear within the knowledge card at the top of the results. People see your brand. They see that it's from you. They don't click through and see your analytics, but at some point, who cares? If they still saw your brand, you still helped them, and they still see that, then you may have accomplished what you set out to anyway. It's just not going to be attributed as well.
Right, right, of course. And getting that top of funnel sort of just brand awareness and awareness of your brand. Who better to vouch for you than Google, right? If Google's going to feature you on their search result page, that's a pretty good thing. And if people don't know what I'm talking about here, do you have an example that you know off the top of your head where a knowledge card will show up?
Recipes are a big one now. I don't know any exactly off the top of my head, but...
Wasn't there that one for a while, which was fire engines red? Did you ever see that?
I think so. It sounds familiar.
Yeah. If people haven't looked at this, do a search for Wire Fire Engines Red and take a look at what the response is. They may have updated it since I last did it, but it was just, somebody had gamed the knowledge card and it was kind of a crazy response.
Still not that hard to do.
So it's not that hard. You can't leave with that and not go into it.
Well, we know what their data sources are. So yeah, you can. What Google is not good at is understanding what you're telling it. And that's what they're working on. Back checking, right? Being able to actually understand, is this good, and not, are these words here and phrased and maybe kind of mean something? And that's what I think they'll improve at maybe next. I think it'll take a while because they're still behind what a lot of the articles give them credit for, I feel like, but we do know which way they're going. There's a analogy I love. AJ Cohn is an SEO blogger. His company is called Blind 5-Year-Old because that's how he perceives Google still. kind of hyperactively bouncing all over your site, not really knowing what it's doing. But they are still moving in a direction that makes sense. And with the knowledge cards, there's different sources of data where, you can literally just put it in and hope that Google crawls it. So you can update Wikidata, wikidata.org. Put in some bunk information and sure, they might index it. They might feed it there. It's not that hard to fool it.
That's funny. All right. I got some pressing questions to get to here, even though this is fascinating and would be fun to explore all the idiosyncrasies of the world of Google. But let's put ourselves in a position of a buyer looking to acquire a business. And I want to talk about opportunities for SEO and how to uncover some of those and where some of the mistakes are. Sure. But before we do that, let's talk about due diligence side of things. Somebody's looking to buy a business, it receives a good amount of traffic from natural organic rankings. What are some of the things that people should be looking out for when doing due diligence? For example, private blog networks, are these still something to look out for? Or are there other things that you may want to caution people on inspecting before they do an acquisition?
Right. So without a doubt, I would never buy any website without looking at its backlink portfolio. There are basically two arms of SEO, right? You've got what happens on the website and off of it. I'm not so concerned about what's happening on the website. I know just based on my background, I can probably make it a lot better, but I know that it's not a danger zone, right? Mm-hmm. Links are. So first, are they trending upwards? That's a good sign. Bad links tend to get moderated. It makes sense. If somebody spams a whole bunch of forums or blogs, they use a piece of software, it's going to get trimmed away. And there are Google patents that talk about this as a signal. Like if somebody blasts 100,000 links and all of a sudden they disappear, I immediately know something's wrong. And even if something's not wrong, if they had a good reason for that to happen, I still haven't really seen one. But if they did, like that pattern looks really bad. So that's the first thing. Second, I guess I start to dig into it and I start to look for schemes. Like you mentioned, like are there link wheels? You mentioned like you and I are pre-Panda people a little bit here. I know the schemes because I've used the schemes. I've tried the schemes and I know what all of them look like. There's any of maybe a dozen, which might go beyond our time right now. But
so with some of these schemes, How would somebody identify these? Obviously, link patterns. So, seeing declining backlinks would be an example of links being moderated away from low quality sites or even high quality sites where it's been spammed to a public place. But for like a link wheel or a PBN, are there tools that you would recommend somebody use for this? Or is it really just something where you need to hire somebody like you to be able to help identify these schemes?
Sure. Well, I won't go so far as to say someone has to hire me, but I do have a lot of skepticism in the tools only because we see them throw a lot of false positives. They do good things too, but our team has used every backlink auditing tool, I think, at this point, and they're flawed, certainly, especially when you pair them with the activity of disavowing links, which is usually the natural next step. When you find bad links, people tend to use the disavow form in Google Search Console, and that's irreversible. So it's really, really dangerous. We've very frequently been approached by people that ran an automated link audit, got a lot of terrible advice, disavowed a lot of good links, their rankings went away, and they need help. And all we can say is, well, now you've just got to rebuild. Like, you shouldn't have done this. That was a bad idea. So I think it's just about recognizing the schemes. And the most overarching litmus test in my mind is, does this double as good marketing? Sometimes it's just a completely automated site. Like, you see a lot of these like statistics websites and Whois websites, those big automated plays. I would usually say if a site links to every site on the internet, which you can usually see, like, is it linking to every domain alphabetically? You see that a lot in the backlink tools. I don't worry about those. I don't think you should disavow those because that's not a scheme. That's not a pattern that you went out and willed. And that's a flaw in every auditing tool I've used. So I wouldn't worry about those. I also wouldn't worry about anything that is editorially relevant. Like, is it editorial, a guest post, a press release, a mention of any kind, really, that happened from a human? But if it didn't, and you can usually tell by just kind of thumbing through the site a little bit, that usually means that your link is appearing besides other schemes. And if a link is really easy to get, that by definition kind of makes it a bad link, which is counterintuitive, right? You've got all these SEO services that are offering fast, easy links for everybody. That's flawed because if it's really for anybody, that means that your link appears besides porn sites, pill affiliates, like all sorts of really kind of sketchy looking stuff. It shouldn't be easy for everybody. And that's really the way to tell, I think.
So something that we see with Quiet Light Brokerage in our backlink profile is we'll get a piece published in Forbes or Entrepreneur or Inc. or, a good piece. And obviously we love those backlinks, but then sure enough, there's these really low quality sites that will take that article, that blog post, and they'll republish it. And, it's just a complete spammy site. You can tell that there's never a human that has touched that site other than initially to set it up. Are those backlinks, if somebody's doing a backlink analysis on a site and they see some good high quality backlinks, but then they see a whole bunch of copycat stuff, is that anything to worry about in your opinion?
It depends a little bit on the site. If they're purely just scraping Forbes, I'd say, well, do they link back? Because if they do, it reminds me a little bit of press syndication, which is perfectly natural. And it's a signal that I think any grown-up brand is going to have, right? Like, you've got basically every publicly traded company is letting out regular press releases. So if I put on my, if I'm Google hat, that actually looks okay. But if it's a really low quality site, you might see them also doing other shady stuff. So you might have to look at their backlink portfolio and kind of pick apart what they're doing.
Okay, fair enough. That's good advice. And if anybody is listening to this and you're completely lost as far as what Corey is talking about here, I'm sure you could reach out to him and get a little bit more insight into some of these things. The world of SEO is kind of this big old rabbit hole. You can understand on a very basic level, or you can get into sort of the more nuanced stuff, in which case you're talking about link wheels and different types of shapes as far as linking patterns, which I've thrown most of that out the window years ago when I started seeing a lot of the updates come through. So, and I want to talk about that. We talked a lot about backlinks and backlink profiles. It's been my perception, and please correct me, you're the expert in this, not me. It's been my perception that backlinks haven't been so much devalued as might have been surpassed, or might be having other ranking indicators kind of come up alongside backlinks as being important. And one of the ones I've seen has been topical coverage on a page. So an example of that would be, we have a blog post on what is seller's discretionary earnings. Well, we also want to cover not only what is seller's discretionary earnings, but what does it mean for an accrual basis versus cash basis accounting? And what is net income? What is gross revenue? Because these are related topics to the one thing. So having all that content on is a good signal to Google. Am I correct or incorrect or off base when I say that backlinks, while still important, are playing alongside some of these other newer ranking factors?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be correct in saying on-page matters more and in more nuanced ways. It's tough to weigh, like, do links matter less? Because links are infinite, really. On-page is still finite. So I think in that math equation, links can never matter less because you can always do more with links. You can't always do more with your site. So that makes that equation interesting. But since the Hilltop algorithm, which I believe was written by Krishna Barrett, he published a paper that was actually, it's really old. It was pre-Panda by a lot. And it broke down, I think, what they've been building upon for a really long time, which for the first time defined what they called topical experts. And if you really dig into the paper, it appears to be talking about domains as experts. And they've played with this a little bit. You know, you had authorship with Google Plus, I think was one sort of riff on that idea. But trying to figure out who really knows about a topic. And around that time, SEOs went crazy with the concept of relevance. People were saying, well, you only want links from relevant sites. I think that's bunk because, well, do I not want a link from CNN? They're not an SEO website. Obviously, I do. Obviously, that's still a good link. But there's more value if I get somebody from within my space on average. So it's just one more metric. It's a little bump, I feel like, in their favor if they're relevant or if you're relevant. They're looking at the themes throughout your site, definitely. So to your point, yeah, that exact same idea. The more you cover a topic, the more I think your ratio of expertise is strengthened there. And for the same reason, like a niche e-commerce shop should absolutely be able to outrank Amazon. They're generic. They don't have that focus. And we see that a lot.
It seems to be a recurring theme with this podcast here, how to beat Amazon at their own game. And I've talked to so many e-commerce business owners who get frustrated by when they put their own listings up on Amazon and all of a sudden Amazon's outranking their niche store. But I think your point of, if you have good topical coverage on your site, if you're doing, if you're making sure the on-page is right, you should be able to outrank Amazon because it is a specialized site. And that actually segues really nicely into the final section I want to cover, and that is opportunities for pretty much any buyer when you're looking to acquire an online business. Opportunities in SEO. I see huge opportunities with most of the stuff I look at in working on the on-page SEO. What are a few areas, in your opinion, that people should look at when they're looking to grow the SEO presence of either an e-commerce shop or a SaaS business or a content business? But really kind of looking at that SEO portion, what are a few areas that are common pieces of low-hanging fruit that you see?
Sure. Well, since Panda, there are a lot more diamonds in the rough, I feel like, that just have broken on-page SEO. And the poster case study going all the way back was DannyWeb, right? Everyone was talking about DannyWeb, which was one of the biggest tech forums. They lost basically all their rankings when Panda first hit. And they managed to recover by removing what people later called thin content, which were just pages that might have 50 words on the page. It was all the different individual profiles that people had. There were millions of them. Most of them were a bad search engine experience. So when I see a site that has a lot of pages that don't offer value to Google, but don't carry the no index tag, the meta tag in the source code, or it's not a meta tag, but code in the source code that says, keep this out of Google's index, I know, well, hey, I can do that and overnight strengthen the stuff I want to keep and cut out the stuff that's just never going to be of any value. And that's going to help a lot. I also look for sites that don't have a keyword strategy, sites that for whatever reason have never had any links, but still enjoyed some organic success. There's a lot of ways to play this. In total, there's, I think, a couple hundred ranking factors. I basically just look for a couple that have been 100% neglected, because I feel like that's where people leave the most money on the table, basically, where I can see a quick win.
I think, again, kind of to round out this discussion, I think since the updates and after the updates, everybody was scared of organic traffic, and understandably so. I mean, it was very difficult for a lot of these people because they owned a business overnight, an update happened, and boom, rankings were gone, revenue's gone. A lot of businesses were built on this kind of shaky SEO. And Google's done a good job of cleaning that up, but people now see the benefit of relying on paid acquisition. As a result, though, I think there's a huge opportunity for buyers to take a look at pretty much any property that is not on Amazon, so any web-based property, content sites, et cetera, and be able to really grow that business through good SEO practices. As you said, looking at keyword strategies, is there a keyword strategy there? Or do they have good topical coverage? Are they doing the basics to be able to rank well? And because no one is really doing that, or very few people are really doing that on-page SEO anymore, it's kind of amazing how quickly it's fallen out of favor. Yeah. So let me ask you, if anybody wants to talk to you, what's the best way to reach you?
Sure. Well, they can hop on our website, which is just northcutt.com. Drop me an email. It's just Corey@northcutt.com, or follow me on Twitter, Corey_Northcutt. It's an E, my first name. And any of those work.
All right, good. Well, we will link to those in the podcast page, the show notes, so everyone can take a look at that. And, you know, again, we don't get kickbacks from guests or anything like that, but we do refer people that we've used in the past successfully and like the services. And yours is definitely a service that I've gotten good value out of. I know you did some work for me. I think it was back in October. Your group did some work for me, and those pages are doing quite well now. So thank you for that. I never gave you an update on that, but they're doing pretty well.
Yeah,
so thanks so much for coming on. I think this is an interesting topic and maybe one that we need to explore again in the future.
Oh, I'd like that.
All right. Thanks, Corey.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.